Welcome, welcome, and welcome everybody to the Research VR podcast. How are you doing, Peter? I promise I'm going to do the intro right this time. Let me get through the intro. I'll say hello to you. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Research VR podcast. I am your host again, Oz Balabanian, and for the first time, I'm actually doing the intro correctly and not forgetting about it like every other time. And Mr. Mouthbeater over here is Mr. Peter Leckoff from Germany.
Hello, everyone.
Joining in.
Welcome to the live stream.
Sorry if there's if you're hearing sounds and notifications. I think I need to mute some things. There are always. We're doing this live, like we've been doing for the past couple of weeks, just because it's been really fun. Actually, it keeps our production timelines like way quicker, so that we can turn these episodes around, and we give the audience the time to actually participate and kind of ask questions. Peter, it sounds like you're in like the university or something.
I'm actually right now at my work, and I hope that my coworkers will be a little bit more quiet around me. I don't see them, so I have to speak to them virtually. Not sure they hear me, but we will filter it out later. I hope it doesn't disturb too much.
Let's see if we're actually live everywhere. Not live on Periscope. Not live.
No.
Oh no.
Losing our audience.
What's up?
No.
Why are we not live? Let's take a second. Give us a moment, guys. We're making sure.
Give us a moment. That moment, I can maybe explain this whole live thing. So what we are doing is we're inside a virtual environment called Big Screen, and I and Azar are wearing those Oculus Touch thingies that we can interact with each other. We can speak with each other. We have a huge big screen in front of us, as the name already implies. And we usually talk about things. We plan to later invite guests as we develop this format. And we want to make it interactive, way more efficient, that we can deliver more shows and more entertainment to you. And that's, you know, the road ahead. So feel free to give us feedback and, you know, share
that's
your
right.
love for us.
I wanted to throw a shout out to Travis Barker, actually. He's helping moderate the chat. So if you have questions, concerns, not concerns, just questions, nice things, and that you want us to answer, he's moderating it. We're live on we should be live on Facebook now. We are live on Twitter. We're live on YouTube. Oh,
I'm gonna
hear myself. Okay, there we go.
Do you hear yourself?
And then we're good now. Whew. All right, everybody. Now that we have the show running for the first time, Should we get on with it?
Definitely.
Let's.
What
do
we have prepared for our lovely audience? You folks there right now. Sound is a little bit too movie.
We don't do the newscast thing on this show. Today I really want to talk. We're going to get through a bit of the news, not the usual news. Some things that kind of stuck out to us. A few shout outs that I want to throw, and then get into our main topic, which is photogrammetry. I don't know if we've talked about it much before, but
we had one episode with realities, right?
We did. That's right.
Yeah, it was a very long time ago.
The kings of photogrammetry. We talked a little bit
they
about locomotion. Probably in like episode 20 or 30. Sorry for if you guys are hearing the bings and the boops. I don't know if there's any way to mute Facebook. But we're gonna get on with it. So the first thing I want to talk about today is ChromaLab. This thing is ridiculous. If you have a good GPU, let's say the 10 series GTX GPU, or I don't know what the min spec this runs on, but essentially it's like a huge particle simulator. So check this out.
Wow, that looks impressive.
Essentially you can create particles, you can interact with particles, you're inside of this like cubes, so like the particles can bounce off the walls, and you can create these incredible looking things.
Maybe you can compare it to those, you know, sandbox games that you used to have in your browser, right, where you would like stack sand on top of each other and would like make lava and stuff, and this is just in 3D and looks super fancy.
It is, and honestly, like, the video doesn't do it justice, because being in there and seeing these particles kind of like be all around your face, like all around your body, all around your face, mesmerizing experience. It's one of the only things you can kind of do, like, it's one of the apps that only can work in VR in terms of like why it's fun and why it actually makes sense.
You don't want to mess your room with all that color and particles.
Great. Hey Travis, how are the streams looking? I let me know if it's choppy or whatnot. We're trying to keep the internet working in America. But yeah, no, this is now available on Steam. Sean Tan is the guy that made it. One man team. I think the link, we'll drop the link in the description and
definitely.
So yeah, check it out, called Chroma Labs. I think it's a trip and a half. I've spent a lot of time in there actually, just playing around with particles, playing around with like with different physics properties, and it really does kind of play with your understanding of how our particles, you know, work in this world. So,
yeah, also shows a limitation in certain ways that we can't simulate that easy that many particles as we would like to, right?
Right. So you can't, I mean, that's even a customizable thing. You can up it or down it in terms of the amount of particles based on your GPU. But yeah, you can really push it up to, God, I think it's like hundreds of thousands, if not millions. Cool.
There is apparently also maybe a side notice difference regards VR and Quadro GPUs and normal GPUs. Like when you have a 1080, you can use them for VR and they are ready, but there are also those Quadro professional GPUs out there that are actually already VR enabled, and you can use two of them. They cost enormous amount of money.
The Quadros, you mean?
Yes, but there are Quadros that have all this VR NVIDIA support in them, like all the chips that do this rendering tricks, and you can use two of them and stack them together.
Can
and
you
they render your?
But I mean, does that work with VR? I know Quadros are obviously meant for more for like deep learning. Oh, they are.
No. They are VR optimizers. One, which I will put in the show notes. One line of them, the newest one that has all the optimizations from the 1080 regards VR, and you can do Sly with them. So you can combine two of them, and then you can
Sly power.
Exactly.
Ooh, Sly. I like Sly better, actually. So.
Oh, yeah, SLI. Yeah. SLI.
No. Sly. I like.
I'm sorry. I'm German. We are in Germany. Are not very good with language.
I like how your German accent sounds nothing German. Maybe that's how Germans do it. All right, our next topic. I want to go through these quickly because I want to get to the main topic today.
But that's also a good topic.
This week has been Gamescom, and during Gamescom, it's probably the biggest game oriented conference.
It is the biggest, 400 or 500,000 visitors. It's a lot.
Apart from
Merkel was there.
I was going to say, apart from Angela Merkel, actually, you know, being at Gamescom trying out Farming Simulator of all things. This was
German things.
This was something that was shown. I'll just zoom in so you guys can read it. B-Haptics Tact Suit promises a better actuator-based haptics at lower price point. So, yeah.
It looks very promising, and what's so special about it are the amount of actuators it actually has, right? How many does it have?
This has 87 individual actuators, so...
they are pushing you, right?
Looks like 5x4, so it's 20 in the front, 20 in the back, and a bunch, another 40, 20 and 20. Where are those?
On the head.
Yeah, I think there are a few on
the neck.
They're just kind of spread out all throughout. Oh, I think they are on the arms.
They're arms. This is arms, and this is maybe the neck.
That's right. So, I mean, I think that their main claim to fame is that they are way more, they have way more points of actuators than
the
others do. I mean, the writer from Road to VR was saying that he was getting pretty hot after like 5 to 10 minutes of just wearing like a suit. But I mean, I don't know. I think these things are definitely like in their early stages, but there's definitely the fact that there's this many that are being built means there's some kind of demand. And some kind of the experience, although it's not the best, I think there's still something really convincing about it.
I think it totally makes sense because, we discussed smell in the last episode. Smell is something that does not gain or give you that higher immersion as touching or feeling the world around you. Like, we heavily rely not only on seeing the world, not only moving there, but actually feeling it around us, right? And if we can somehow make sure that you in a VR experience can at least few the boundaries or few something, this is like obviously the key. Like, if this is a solution long term, I don't know how it will work out, but you're right, there are a lot of companies trying it, and it's also kind of obvious why they're doing it, because this is like really the future, basically, hopefully, and it's working out.
I mean, I think you of all people know this, like the sense of touch and being able to like actually to grow a new sense, or let's just call it sensory substitution by its like real yes. name, really will come from the sense of like touch and how I'm trying to show you guys my arm, but I guess you can't see it. we have such sensitive skin and yes. that can really be used as the input for a new sense.
We actually had this project on our university.
Tell us
about QSpace.
Yeah, I think
the QSpace project is exactly sensory augmentation, like not substitution. No, it was substitution exactly. Substitution. I always mix them up. Like you would wear 24 vibromotors or 32 around your belt, and it would in the study we did in the university basically point you where north is, and we wanted to figure out, or the university wanted to figure out whether a human can adapt a new sense or it can be substituted. And later on, they are right now building a product for blind people out of it, but kind of goes in that direction. You can use a touch to give certain information. They have right. a lot of crazy examples where you can project images through needles on your back, or you can read with your tongue by electrodes. And it kind of works out, and we just need to figure out the right format, and it shouldn't be that bulky. But, you know, that's awesome.
Right.
It's a missing step towards more immersive worlds.
Well, I think we'll definitely see more coming on this regard. I still haven't tried any of them. Oh, actually, I recognize that Anker battery that's being used.
Yeah.
It's a 20,000.
I used it 2 weeks ago with a TP-Cast, yes.
That's right. It's the same battery as the TP-Cast. And, I mean, yeah. I was going to say it makes sense, but it doesn't really. I mean, it's just it
use any of them. They're huge.
Actually, it's funny that they're comparing themselves to the Subpack, which
The Tesla's huge, by the way.
Tesla's huge.
Well, the Subpack is kind of very limited. However, the Subpack at least gives you something, right?
The Subpack isn't a haptic suit. It's a freaking subwoofer for music that's now being used for VR. Like, you know what I mean? I don't but I don't want to
say. Oh, you have a point. Yeah, you have a point. Yes.
I mean, it's a music product rather than a VR product.
We had actually an episode on Subpack, which we didn't do.
We recently posted it with Zach Jaffe, and it was a conversation I had with him a few months ago. Kind of talking about music.
It was a lovely conversation.
It was really cool. Yeah, I enjoyed that as well. Next topic at hand is there was a new investment round coming in from who led this one? Dunhua Capital for an esports VR broadcasting silver.tv, and they've raised $9.8 million. And in the round was also, let's see, I'll zoom in so we can all see what's going on here. We do it. Can we do it? Can we do it? Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Dunhua Capital, Heuristic Capital, Zip Capital led, and additional funding partners, DCM, Sierra Ventures, and the VR Fund, and Samsung Next. Wow, there's a few more. And Sony Innovation Fund. The VR Fund, having funded a ton of VR projects out there.
Definitely.
The reason why I want to talk about this is because I'm kind of surprised because
why?
Oh man. So I don't know if you've ever watched a sliver.tv live stream.
No.
What essentially they do is they generate a 360 camera inside of the game itself. And let's say Counter-Strike, like they actually don't generate a 360 camera. They generate multiple normal FOV cameras, and then they stitch it like exactly as 360. Hold up. No. You shouldn't be wowing at this. You should be like, like, why are you stitching cameras if you already have an engine to work with?
I'm listening.
Okay, so here's my experience with Sliver, and I actually spent maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours about 6 months ago sitting down and watching a CSGO tournament. So they take the normal tournaments that happen in esports, the ones that are being broadcasted to 200, 300,000, and even a couple million sometimes people watching, and they put you inside of the CSGO environment, and then they put a big TV in front of you that is the actual live stream that they're doing, you know, the first-person view of the players.
Yes.
But it's like, it's supposed to be much more helpful for you to be in the environment and seeing the players, you know, running. However, it sounds great, right? But like the fact that you can't actually choose where you yourself are in the environment, you're in a 360 video, like first and foremost, that is in the environment that's not always ideal to watch, you know, what's going on. So what you end up doing is just looking at the big screen anyway and like watching the thing there. And then every once in a while, you look down, you're like, oh, look, I see players running around, and like, but you don't actually understand like the relationship and how accurate people are shooting. It's I don't know. I felt that I gave it really close. Like, I gave it a try, and I yeah. want the benefit out of doubt. I was like, is this about
defended?
Hold up. Let me finish. Okay. I wanted to like actually test and see if there's more value in actually being in a 360 environment for in CSGO, like actually being there and watching these people play. And that quite honestly, the answer to it is 90% of the time, no. And the only 10% of the time that it did make sense is only when you see the teams going at first and all the players are still together. And it's cool to see that movement, and you can understand like how people are splitting and going into other roads. Apart from that, it's like you'd rather watch the first person view feed of the player, because you care more about the accuracy of the player than you do about like where they are or where you are in the game. So for that reason, what? So maybe...
Yes, I get your point. I think it's a very valid argument. Right,
give us the defense. Defense.
Because I never tried it, so let me defend them, you know, be the devil's advocate. So what they are trying right now, this, you know, this whole stitching, well, they are doing the best out of the worst, so there is no 360 camera support in those games yet. Maybe it will come, so right now they figured out a hack, which is cool itself. They figured out a hack. Now, you know, few of my colleagues who actually bought themselves privately Daydreams and Gear VRs actually... most of the time use them just to watch YouTube. They're just too lazy to look at the screen, so just lie in bed and look at a huge screen of YouTube. It's actually quite convenient.
That's fair. So, I mean, that's where we are too. We're in big screen, and that's
exactly actually
in a big it's an app, so you can watch things so, on the big screen.
I mean, as far as I understand, the 9.8 million were not invested in the current state, but to develop it further, right? And like yeah. I would say there is potential. I mean, I'm not myself a big esports game fan. Like, I'm not watching it 24/7, but some matches are awesome. And if you could, for instance, like really look around the players or do something more interactive than right now, how awesome would it be? But that obviously requires a huge support from the engine. Then you need to do some proper hacking around, whatever. It's like a huge amount of extras that you need to add. And right now they found an easy hack, and that's why they get the money, because the idea is there.
Yeah, but I mean, they
obviously needs to improve, sure.
I agree. I mean, I just, in its current state, there's just no reason to use it. And that's why it kind of, it just confuses me as to why.
No,
I mean, there's when there's companies like Vireal that are essentially perhaps taking the idea literally a little too far in terms of how fast their turnaround cycles are, because they've been around for like maybe a year and a half, but I haven't seen them integrate themselves into more than one game. And I'm like, okay, where is that coming? So, and for something like this, we're like, oh, we'll just generate camera viewpoints and then stream that out. Like, it's easier and faster to do. I get that.
Yeah.
Like, at the end, it still comes back to the value proposition and whether it actually makes sense for the full, you know, that million people that are watching live. Even if you have 10% of that watching in VR, is that a better experience than watching it just on Twitch?
True.
So that's just a big question. I'm really into, you know, streaming. I'm into watching esports.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a personal, I'll take this personally.
I understand. Before you click away, wait. Okay. There's another news there about Fallout 4.
What, you want to talk about Fallout 4?
I don't want to talk so much about Fallout 4, but I just wanted to ask you, have you ever tried it?
Fallout?
In VR.
No, I haven't tried it in VR.
Because I read a lot of things from Gamescom, and we mentioned Gamescom, that people tried the new version of Fallout VR, and they say that it might be a big disappointment for people. And as much as we are not about games, this might have a huge impact.
Maybe. I mean, I'll take people's word for it in terms of how... I think it'll be one of the system sellers for sure, and Vive has it coming. But we don't want to go into...
Yeah, into just wanted to ask that. God.
No, that's not something I want to talk about. Rec Room. Rec Room's awesome.
I played recently Rec Room. It's actually very impressive.
Rec Room is, oh my God. They're for one of the only products that's just been really, really quickly innovating on what they've already built. And like, they're essentially making
so now
World of Warcraft style, you know, quests to go through and dungeon to do with your friends. It's really brilliant.
And it's not easy. Like,
you can't really do it by yourself.
Yes, and you need a lot of coordination. So it's not just, you know, you swing around the sword. You really need to do tactics and stuff.
That's right. I just wanted to throw a quick shout out to them for really, like, they were one of the innovators in the social VR space. They, I think, were the first ones that integrated a lot of the advancements that the Google Daydream Interactions Lab team announced, like in 2016. They had an awesome talk that was like, we prototyped for this many weeks. This is all the stuff that we learned. I think Against Gravity, that you know, the people that made Rec Room, took a lot of those findings from Google and integrated it into Rec Room. Just to name a few, the first being that a social VR experience is not just a place to go and to talk to people. It's actually the approach should just be that you go into there to do something, and by chance there are other people to do it with, and that's what makes it fun. So I think, I mean, this is, if you're a fan of alt space, or like if you're coming from that angle, there's a lot of things that are different about alt space and about Rec Room. And I think it goes to show that Rec Room, like how well Rec Room is doing compared to alt space, who is now back from the dead. And
Has he back?
Oh, yeah.
I heard some rumors.
Don't worry about your screen, Peter.
Don't worry about your screen. I wanted to read the comments.
Travis, let us know what's going on the chats, and if we should be answering some of our wonderful people. And actually, before we move to our main topic, I wanted to talk quickly about The Wizards, and it's a game on Vive that came out, and that just added locomotion. And this is the reason I want to talk about it is because it's too many games that keep coming out that just have teleportation. I don't know if this is my first rant or not. I've probably done this a few times throughout the almost...
Really? 50. What do you have against teleportation?
I think, okay, the thing I have against teleportation, I'll say this again, is that you don't develop a cognitive map of where you are. You don't develop any kind of, let's call it a slam system in your own head of where you're... places, and it completely destroys the grand scale of things. So I think a way around that is actually just floating. So one of my favorite things right now is like Lone Echo and Echo Arena amongst, and I'll throw a shout out to Lucid Trips as well, because they were one of the first or earliest ones to integrate hand-based locomotion. But it's basically moving through an environment like you would want to move, rather than like, oh, I want to go there. I'm going to point my hand there and then click a button and end up there. Like, this is like, oh, I'm going to grab the world.
Yeah, literally move. Like sprawling through. Yeah.
It feels way better. It's incredibly immersive. I haven't played the Wizards update yet, but like, I just wanted to throw them a shout out for adding that in. And also as a warning and a precursor to the other developers that are watching and listening to this, if you're going to launch an action game in VR or something that's going to require agility and movement, do not launch with just teleport. Like, don't even make that the primary locomotion device, because not only will Reddit shit on you, but YouTube and Twitch streamers and probably me will not be happy. Like,
and I will tell you something, if Azad will not be happy with you, you will get so bad ratings everywhere, like you will be dead. And bankrupt. I actually have one small announcement. I'm right now preparing, and at some point I might be ready, an episode where we can actually discuss particularly one of the topics, because I am not sure if VR is just about embodiment or maybe the extended mind theory. And I think what you just described goes in that direction.
Embodiment or extended mind theory? Are they, exactly. I mean, I'm thinking are they at
exactly. opposition? It's not easy. Kinda. They're not necessarily the same. That's the thing. I'm reading some... Yeah, okay. So look, this is very basic. Just imagine you have a puzzle. If you take your puzzle and interact with your hands with it, and you would build it yourself, you know, that's kind of embodiment. If you first look at the puzzle and start to build it in your head, and then you do it, then it's kind of the extended mind theory. And the question is, when you start to teleport, you definitely, and it's more about other things, but just an example, when you teleport, you don't, you know, do this cognitive map, whatever, so the embodiment is not that strong, but you still interact with the world as it is, you know, part of your mind. But when you like do the opposite and crawl through it, then it's embodiment. But both can have an advantage, right? And that's something I'm really trying to figure out. And if any of our listeners know someone or knows themselves the difference between embodiment and the extended mind theory and can explain it regards VR, I'm more than happy to invite you as a guest and listen to your opinions. Like, please, my head is boiling and I'm reading papers and I'm going mad.
Sure. So the question is embodiment or extended mind theory, and how it
relates to VR. Do they play in VR against each other?
Yeah. So send us your comments. We've been getting some really cool emails from people, actually. Just like someone emailed us about the Subpack article and the episode, and they were really excited about the recommendations that were given in there in terms of like the music VR experiences. Yeah. So we really like seeing those. If you have comments, actually add them to the podcast or the podcast listeners that you use. And I'll just reiterate this, but if you're on audio and you're listening to this via podcast, make sure to leave us a review. It really helps us out. Or if you're watching us live, know that we have a podcast and subscribe to us on our podcast feature. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Moving on.
Wonderful. Moving to
our main topic of the week, which is photogrammetry.
Whoa.
So this looks, that's a nice picture, right? A nice photo.
Yeah, it is.
Guess what?
Is it real?
Guess what? Dun 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 dun.
Oh my god! Did you sculpture it yourself?
I did no such thing. I did no 3D reconstruction. This is all. Actually, this is it. This is a 3D reconstruction. What I meant to say is, I didn't model it myself.
Didn't sculpture.
This is a curvy tree, and it's something I captured yesterday by just walking around it and taking photos.
Was your iPhone or was it?
This DSLR? Is this one's with a DSLR. Okay. I was spending, and the reason we want to talk about this is because this is actually not a new method, but it's been around a little bit in game design, but I think it's making the biggest, and it's going to make the biggest impact still, over the next couple of years. 3D photogrammetry or 3D reconstructions of photos. That's essentially what a photogrammetry is. It takes many photos that essentially have, let's say, 50 or 60% overlap of what are in the pictures. Oh my god, Facebook, just shush.
So maybe as a side note, the iPhone kind of does it too with the cameras. It kind of can separate certain things, but here it, the depth information is used for more. So it's basically the same as the iPhone, just with more photos.
There's literally no like depth cameras. There's no IR cameras. It's all
just,
I'm going to have to turn off Facebook. This is
getting you can do ridiculous. It, but while you do it, the question is, does the iPhone with a two lenses system and the 7 Plus, it can also measure the distance by two photos, right? And can do this bokeh effect.
That's doing,
technically the same?
Okay. So that's doing something very different and for a completely different effect as well.
Okay.
The photogrammetry is essentially, from what I understand, computer vision that is, it's based on a lot of computer vision principles, and it takes, reference points between pictures. So let's say features, lines, and even and also pixel colors, and matches them as reference points, and then compares every photo that you took of this, of the object that you're trying to take a photo of, and then compares those photos together. So notice these dots that are around. Those dots are where I took the photos from. You see that?
It looks to the audio listeners like a cloud of dots around this reconstruction tree.
It kind of looks like an atom, kind of, you know, you have like electron shells around, because I was doing kind of an orbit maneuver where I was going around every step. I took a step photo.
Yeah.
So you keep.
Do you have a system or you just randomly go around?
I do. I mean, I have a mental system of like things that I want, how I want to get through. I'm just going to still talking a little bit about how it works. After you take the photos from high and low, basically like far out where you have the entire object, and you can also go in closer to get those really detailed textures. You then put it into a software like this, which is it's called Reality Capture, which then aligns your photos, and then here, show you guys what the photos look like.
You just dropped one of the photos in the menu, and now, like one photo of the tree.
These are just
on one side, but it's just 2D.
So yeah, they're just photos. I mean, there's even inconsistent humans between photos where that's a person in that corner, but like if it doesn't see that person in any other photo, it's just going to disregard it.
It looks really impressive.
It really is impressive. It creates a dense point cloud. That's the beauty of it, is that it actually is super super high quality. This model in particular has, let's see how many polygons.
And the magic with point clouds is you can do all kind of filtering to create a beautiful mesh out of it.
This is a 20 million polygon, and even reduced down to 1 million polygons, it still looks fantastic. So the reason why it looks transparent is because it's still a point cloud, and I haven't, you know, created it into a mesh. But
because each point doesn't have a necessary orientation, and that's what you need for a mesh.
That's right. It's kind of like a voxel, right?
Yes.
I'm gonna open up a few other things and just kind of show a few examples of what I've been working on this week and why, and we'll get into a discussion as to why we think photogrammetry is really freaking cool and how it's going to be really relevant. So unfortunately, when I open up the files, you're not seeing the mesh. These are all on Sketchfab actually, and you can go and download them and add them into your game. Like literally, I've made this for free. You can even make money off of them. That's how free I've made it.
You're a very gorgeous person.
Well, only with
you don't say gorgeous.
I'm not a gorgeous person.
This is gorgeous. No, how do you say it?
You're a great person. That's what you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
I'm not. I just
generous. No, sorry, it was generous.
Yeah, generous.
That's gorgeous. Generous. I'm trying to flirt here with my co-host. Oh my gosh, I'm getting red.
We can tell. We can actually see how you're blushing on your cheeks and your avatar. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this, Peter.
Yes.
When you have technology like this, which is essentially, I kind of describe it as like a photograph, like plus, because it's not just a picture, but it's actually a capture of the full environment and its entirety. It's basically a time. It's a slice of time and space that you've captured to a certain resolution, and you can go higher or lower in resolution depending on like how you capture it. So for VR, like we've seen apps like Realities, which has taken that idea and really run with it, where they've created everything in the app is made out of photogrammetry. It's actually not even a combination of assets. It's all just like one place and one asset, and they specialize in recreating a space in its like full form. Other people usually use it to like capture, let's say, an ornament like that, and then add it into their game so that it's a realistic asset.
Yeah.
So there's multiple approaches around this, and I'm actually really interested in seeing like how this is going to affect AR, because like when you have photorealistic assets, then and if you remove the lighting and whatnot and add it back into the real world, then there's essentially very little distinction that's not actually there. See what I mean?
I totally see that coming.
Oh, let me, sorry.
Obviously,
move into it. We should probably answer a few questions. How accurate? So let's see. Travis Parker is asking me. Travis, by the way, let us know the names of the people that are asking these so that we can give them a shout out. Someone's asking, what is photogrammetry? We just answered that. How accurate are the models captured by photogrammetry? Well, you can see for yourself. Oh, no.
Very accurate. It depends on many factors, is what I would say, but it is resolution of your camera, the quality of the photos, how still you are, and also the amount of calculation power you put into it. So it obviously is the fact that when you calculate longer, you know, the algorithm can basically, as far as I understand, it obviously has many optimizations, but it's mostly brute force. So it brute forces the structure of the object through the different photos by aligning them and testing it out. And the more brute force you apply and the more calculation and power you throw in, the more high quality your photos are, the better it is. And what you can actually do is even project structure light. Like you take a projector, there are projects where you take few cameras from different angles and you rotate the object and you would project a special pattern that helps the software to recognize it. But what Azad shows here, and this is very impressive, is just outside with a camera and then post-processing. So if you do it with your iPhone, I would say in real time, the quality wouldn't be as good. But this looks really astonishing.
iPhone. I mean, I've done a few iPhone things as well.
But not live processing, right?
You're still No. None of them are live. This one, I also discovered something really interesting is that you can actually also pull frames. Where is it?
The slam.
It is. So this is in Croatia. This was a huge valley that I was in, and I was flying my drone around just kind of going about my day, and I was shooting in 4K, and the video was very, very stable. And at the end, I realized, I'm like, huh, I can actually pull these frames and run them through reality capture, and then get a real 3D map of like where I was and the video that I shot And I'm currently working on like being able to recreate those drone shots in engine, like in the photogrammetry model, and like switching between real life.
And it was not your plan, right?
I mean, it wasn't at first, but it is now.
Exactly. Yeah, but sure. But you are kind of taking footage that was not even, you know, meant to do exactly what you just did, right?
And what you can tell with the lines here, those are actually where I was flying, and like that's where I was capturing. Yeah. And so check this out. Like, I flew an orbit around this fort, and so the detail really comes through. So this is, I think this should also be on up on Sketchfab as well. My username there is Wizard of Oz, and Oz with an AZ. You can find it there. We'll link it as well. Feel free to download and mess around. But it is freaking neat, dude. Like, I really want this to be as, like, I want it as AR decoration in my room. I just want, like, a block of a valley just, like, placed onto my, or actually placed vertically on my wall, and, like, you know, why? I don't know. I think these photorealistic assets look awesome in AR.
Last time you showed me your small AR example, I even didn't believe that it was, you know, fake. And I thought you really have some weird stuff in your garden that looks like a city.
Oh, the AR kit?
So in the last episode, yeah. So when you used your models that you scanned and you were showing me the video, like big screen on the last episode where you were projecting it somewhere, I was thought for a moment it's real. So
right. So that's
something. It goes beyond realism.
So that what you're talking about there is that I took one of these models, put them into AR kit, and then placed it into my on the ground. And
yeah, in your garden, and it looked really real.
Like, it really does.
It's not,
I'm trying to talk about this is because, I haven't seen enough photogrammetry or like even interest enough around photogrammetry as a method to create things in VR and AR.
How long did it take you to calculate,
dude? So the model? That ornament took me. It took me less than 5 minutes, I think maybe 5 minutes to capture, and then the processing maybe took me 20 or 25 minutes. Yeah. Like, that's how fast it was.
Wait, on which, what kind of machine do you have?
I have, I'm running a 1080 on a, I mean, it's a pretty beefy machine. Like, it's a four.
Yeah, but it's in standard.
Core i7 6700K, like, processor.
Okay, so it's not a cluster, just a normal.
No. One GPU. You know, yeah.
Wow. 25 minutes?
Wow. Yeah, it might have even been less than that. I mean, these models, I think, definitely take more time because...
I mean, in fact, I played myself with photogrammetry once where I was actually took a course on that, and we used different software. It was open source, and it took ages.
Well, that's...
And even...
That's the beauty with this, with reality capture, is that they're way quicker. It's not free. This is... They have it on Steam, and I think it's like $30 a month or something.
It's fine.
So this is made out of 400 photos, and like it's kind of one of my favorites because you'll see this environment in the Realities app in a few months time. Actually,
I mean, wait, there's like a total use case for it. Like, let's say a place is going to be torn apart, or you have to, you know, move on, and you never see your home place again. Just make a nice 3D scan of it, and you always can revisit it when you're old, you know. Like, you can memory.
That's exactly it. Like, I think it's gonna once the process is simple and you don't have to think about all these things. You know, you don't have to be an expert in photogrammetry to do it.
I mean, come on, the next drone from DJI will, you know, have some crazy modes where it just fly randomly and do photos from all angles, and we'll have it done right.
Once they have sensors all around, kind of like the Phantom 4, it has total capabilities of doing that. And there's already apps like Drone Deploy that use the third party, you know, DJI SDK, and it's made for farmers so that you can block out your farm, and then the drone flies itself, scans, brings it back, and then gives you a model. So
okay, but it goes beyond. Like, let's say we have someone listening right now who is a developer and he wants to build a game. Like, you go to Unity, so you have some kind of either expensive or very shitty free assets on the asset store, and you kind of want to have this beautiful mountain, and you apparently live next to a beautiful mountain. So you get just this tool, you figure it out like you did, and you can basically create beautiful assets even for your game in VR or whatever. Like, you get it for free. You just scan the environment and then you let it calculate, and so it looks astonishing. Like, why even bother sculpturing? to get the nature.
I think there's a trade-off when it comes to like simple, there's certain things that you wouldn't want to recreate with photogrammetry, or it would be easier to model. But when there's, when especially when there's real life involved, there's so many unnormal, or what do you call it, bumpy, or you know, just not symmetric things. So photogrammetry works perfectly with these things. And one of my favorite are just like the rocks. Like I keep coming back to this, and you can't really see it in when it's a point cloud like this. But this is like a Minecraft looking blocky cliffside. It's really wonderful. And so going back to your point of like capturing like things that are really dear to us, I think people will not only obviously capture themselves and like their faces and family photos and environments, but like more of like down to objects and the rooms that they grow up in, and they want to capture it in that point of space, like point in time, and re-experience it. Someone actually, Isaac Cohen Kabibo told me he mentioned this the other day, where he was like, honestly, if you want your room to be clean, you just need to clean it once. You do a photogrammetry capture of the interior, and then if you're like, let's say, meeting up with someone, or even 5 or 10 years,
just a Skype thing. Yeah,
it's all just like suddenly your room, you can overlay your room as a clean room, and it could look really clean, and like, or at least to your eyes, or to someone with AR eyes. I mean,
it's like people sitting without pants but with a suit during this job interviews on Skype, right?
That's literally me right now, except I'm not even wearing a suit up top. So everybody, let us know. I mean, what are your thoughts in terms of photogrammetry? Have you tried it?
Yeah, and maybe you have some other experience yourself. Maybe you created models, you know. The most awesome you share with us, we will actually maybe show next time. Just fun of it.
Right. Actually,
acknowledge your amazing work.
I'm going to ask a few questions or answer a few questions.
Questions. Interactive. We are interactive. We are an interactive media cast.
Sorry, let me fix this.
We listen to our audience. We are the new medium. We are the reason television is dying. We are the reason radio is dying.
I'm so glad Peter can
And to be honest, what I really am kind of impressed is we are right now in VR, and Azad is running VR on his machine. And while Azad is running VR on his machine, he's opening an application that shows a huge 3D scan of a huge rock that he's being able to stream not only to me, but to, you know, hundreds of people, thousands of people out there. Like, technology makes it so easy to communicate. It blows my mind away.
It does blow my mind, too. I'm going to open up a few more things so people can see. While we answer some questions, Travis is asking, what drone do you fly the most? So that was all done with the DJI Mavic. The Mavic is a freaking beast of a, the Mavic is probably one of the coolest and best drones that DJI has made.
How expensive is it?
Just $1,000. It's a combination of like a 4K, it's almost like a phone 4K camera, iPhone 4K camera. It's that size.
With a stabilization.
With a beautiful three-axis stabilizer. And the video footage that you get from that is incredible. So, I mean, it's also great for stills because you can take raw images. So this is an example.
Really?
Yeah, you can take raw. You can take raw with it and JPEG.
Okay, guys and girls out there, don't spend your money on the new iPhone 8. Just save the $1,000 and buy this drone and do awesome stuff.
Really, really cool.
Seems to be over.
So this is a part of a castle in Armenia, this big fort. Actually, let me see if I can pull up the full composite. I don't have the rest of it. This will also come in realities. Click solid, not vertices. So.
Boom.
Oh, wait. Travis is telling me how to fix things. He's telling me how to make it into a solid and not vertices. Where is that? Travis, show me.
Mesh?
No. So that mesh is, it creates it as it exports out a mesh.
Oh, yeah, no, it should actually have a different view when you tell me. Like, there is a program for free, by the way. It's called MeshLab.
Yeah,
I have. MeshLab is open source. It's great. So you don't necessarily need to get this to edit point clouds and meshes, but this one seems to be better. And MeshLab, you can also select between points and, like, this other view that.
Yeah. Oh, well. We'll come back to that. Thank you, Travis. Looks like he's got some experience himself. This is another question for our listeners and viewers to kind of get into. Where do you really see photogrammetry? I mean, take away all the constraints of like of having like DSLR, which you don't need. You can do it with an iPhone. Take away the after post processing in Reality Capture. So to that point, I think where we are right now with the Tango phones is that you can actually do a lot of this in real time. And I'll show some examples.
Before you show the examples, I want to just emphasize one thing. There is a company called Alphabet that used to have Google, or Google belongs to it, and they make a flagship phone called Pixel, and there are apparently rumors that the Pixel 2 is coming out, and I don't understand why the company that has created Tango, that is, from my perspective, from a technological way at least, more superior than ARKit, not putting the Tango in their main flagship phone. So, hey. If anyone has the answer for it, please tell it to me.
I have the answer. Guess what? When the Pixel came out, or I guess the Pixel 2 is coming out now too, Tango was still way too heavy. Like it takes a lot of processing
power.
That's why the Fab was such a huge thing as well in terms of the battery. Like the Fab 2 Pro, the first Lenovo phone.
Make a mod that you can attach to the Pixel. I mean, they're smart guys. They can figure it out.
This point, like, they're creating just special, like, apart from the Qualcomm 835, you know, processor, but, like, they're creating units, hardware that's going to be just dedicated to processing these things. Just like the Tensor processing unit.
Yes.
That's going to be a whole, like, line of things. So this is Manuel's scan from in France. For some reason, Sketchfan is running really badly on my computer, but I think you can...
I think it's because you have a very huge mesh open in your browser, and browsers are not that much optimized to make you...
Well, it works on my Mac, so...
Yeah. Really?
Beautiful. Thank you, Travis. He's still sending me tips on how to fix it in an RC. Let's just take a look at this. I mean, this was made on a phone instantly, and the calculation was done, on the phone, and he uploaded it to Sketchfab.
But this looks
becomes just fully integrated, like, what kind of apps do you see arising from this? What will people actually use it for?
One case that I can totally imagine that goes even beyond that is definitely interacting with humans, have holograms of people.
So,
like, that's something
kind of like want to have. One-time asset capture of yourself, and then you're having a conversation.
Maybe, and then adjusting it to your movement or whatever, or all the time capturing your point, like what Microsoft showed in that one video. I will also link to it, where they basically HoloLens and this little girl being beamed like as a hologram there. But another application is literally just beyond capturing moments and stuff. You can take this scene. You can take many scenes in 3D and you can combine them. Like we use right now Photoshop with photos. You could, instead of, taking photos, you can take 3D reconstructions of those places and just basically, we have a desk here, just combine them and throw them in together and maybe create even more art for movies, for some kind of...
currently, like, movies use photogrammetry to create their CG models sets like that.
Really?
I mean think about it. It's the same. They go through the same processes as games, but instead of modeling, they'd rather have things look super realistic, and they don't have any rendering constraints. They have whole offline render farms that can take days to render a single frame. So for movie making, I think that's already being implemented. But I'm just thinking more on just like the base level, like your mother, how can your mother use something like this? And it doesn't have to be also on like the capture side. I think on the consumer side, as in like to experience these things and to use them on a regular basis, that could be also, that's something what I'm thinking about. Like, memories are so important.
That's definitely true.
whoa there, buddy. Too close. Our avatars.
Whoa.
Yeah, we have our privacy zones.
Yes.
So I really do think that memories are going to be the driving force behind photogrammetry of how well it can capture these things. However, the viewership experience is still a question. Whether you'll re-experience them in VR or like have them as smaller AR scaled maps that you're looking at.
Yeah.
I'd love to get some thoughts on that on people. You know, if you've messed around with some of this, if you already have a working prototype of what you'd love to see, we'd love to show it and show it in our next episode. So let us know what you guys are thinking. I'm still scanning, and if you have cool pictures and videos from your drone that you'd want scanned, send it to us. You can find me on Twitter at AzadUX, AZADUX, or you can email it to us at researchvrcast@gmail.com.
Yes, we have multiple channels to reach us, and we are looking forward to the lovely feedback and ideas, because to be honest, you know, we are doing the show here and we are trying to pretend we're super smart and we know everything about VR and stuff, but to be honest, there's, to my understanding, not many people out there who, you know, can grasp the idea and where will it go really, really, really properly, because it kind of needs forecast abilities that are beyond magic, because a lot of those medium properties develop so fast, intermix with each other, there are some slowbacks, drawbacks, and yeah, it's like Apple releasing the iPhone. Apple releasing the how do you call it?
The Apple Watch
and the Apple Watch. Yes, and they had like a lot of constraints built in the beginning because they thought people will use it more, so they kind of outloaded the processing power to the iPhone, right? And now they kind of allow the apps to run on the watch itself because they basically figure out people don't interact too much with it. It's fine. And the same thing goes, but way more difficult with AR, VR, mixed reality, all those terms. We are just experiencing a lot of things. Like, you know, when, you know, you can run on a very basic, just high-end game machine, this crazy algorithm that can reconstruct the 3D meshes, right? What can you do more? Like, what are the options? And how will this, from the moment it's created, open opportunities to other people who don't want to mess up with this whole process, but actually want to be creative or want to create some educational stuff of it or industrial orientation? Like, you could even use this photogrammetry, except with reflection, it kind of works not very well in industrial cases where you can, you know, just remap once a day with a drone your whole facility and then just basically check by machine learning other crates where they should be or whatever. Just a very basic case, but it's not implemented yet, and there's like a lot of space out there for that. So we all together need to shape the future, and that's why it's so important that we are not here, you know, just telling you our ideas, but you share them with us.
Yeah, it's really a bizarre kind of topic, and I think it's easy to kind of fall into like one mode of thinking, you know, like functional fixedness when it comes to a form of tech. And it really takes like people from a completely different perspective coming in and be like, actually, I would love to use this for fashion. You know, like I'd rather have like model. Actually, I have no idea how fashion would work with this, but you know, you can see where the thinking can go.
Well, maybe there are some fashion people out there who know.
Could very well be. I think photogrammetry has made me want to go into farming and get into growing like a really high efficiency farm that's continuously being monitored by drones and also being irrigated by drones. And that's totally a feasible thing right now. DJI is probably at the top of their game when it comes to the irrigation aspect.
They actually have those drones for using fertilizer and stuff. They have like those drones that are, I think, over 20 or 30K in the price, and they can carry like 20 or 30 liters. I don't know how much it is in your currency, but like, I don't know, 20 bottles of cola or 30 bottles of cola, and you can basically, or 20 bottles of 1 liter of cola, whatever, and you can basically carry fertilizer or some kind of pesticide in it and can directly spray it on the plant that needs it. And there's also a direction. You can use drones, obviously, for delivering blood, you know, to a patient, but you can also use it to maintain this very mixed garden. And I mean, what you just described, I kind of see there are a lot of different plants growing together and sustaining each other, not this monoculture stuff we are used to. We just spray everything on, like, you know, it's carpet bombing, but we actually...
It's very, very precise. And like, literally, and like, you, grow, yeah. And it's... Not just like spraying, but also like analyzing which plant is being sprayed and how much it needs to be sprayed. So like there's a drone essentially is just, rather than thinking of it like a small plane, think of it as like a moving sensor or a moving camera. I mean, yeah, it's been a moving camera for me. It's just something that can go in X, Y, or Z, and I can just tell it to go right. But you can also change that to become a water hose or become you know, it's any kind of other sensor. So, but going back to the models here, I think like when it comes to farms, like you can imagine literally mapping out down to the individual fruit that you have in your plant and like going into and like seeing exactly how many, what the colors of each fruit are, how big they are, like doing analysis on the volume. One other really cool use case that keeps coming up is like construction companies can now have their buildings being built every single day continuously. So like investors that are far off can look at their, or just let's say the foreman can like just have a model in front of them and understand what's being built, how, and even before they build. I saw a YouTube video yesterday where some people that are really into building tree houses, I think it was like a TV show, they scanned out the place before, like they scanned out the plot with the trees that they had, and then they modeled the tree house within the trees before they even built it. And that's something that tree house builders have never had, because you can imagine how hard it is to do, to model something before you build it, especially with an organic thing like trees. Sure, so like, every day I keep seeing new and interesting things coming from photogrammetry.
Is it that you have been using technology for so long that you kind of, you know, start to think about nature more and more, so you kind of try to escape the technology world, all those garden topics? Or
that might have something to do with our current political climate, but yes, let's just say.
Oh, so you're kind of thinking more about the apocalypse than you're
not apocalypse, not apocalypse. Just you know, trying to keep a safe distance between me and another human being,
and the crazy world. Yeah.
All right, guys.
That's not a good sign.
Well, I hope you guys have liked this early show. I'm going to be away this weekend. Sorry we missed last week. We'll try to and let everyone know before we do. Other things. We announced this show a day before on Twitter and Facebook, and people seem stoked about it. So if you don't follow us on our channels, you should, because that's where we announce these things, and you'll be more up to date with us. So that's been that for this week. Let me get that music prepped.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you should start doing your dancing, Mr. Peter. Oh, he's already doing it. And where's the music? Oh, there's the music. Oh,
One day, I will definitely hang myself with the table.
Ah. Oh, no, the camera's in my hand again.
No, oh my God.
Yep.
Is the music playing?